I just found us a little bit early, 2 minutes. And I say that because sometimes people, when they try and come on time and I've already started, it's nice to keep that sense that people don't have to rush, but nevertheless they can still be on time. But anyway, that usual announcement, which I'll say again, anyone who's come for the introduction to meditation that is being held in a room to my right. And I don't mean that little room over there with the IT fellow in there. Is that the introduction to meditation people's room in there? Can I say the room to my right? It doesn't mean that little room. It means outside of the next room over there. Because sometimes I'm amazed that people, they sometimes come into this room, sometimes by mistake, and they sit for 40 minutes. I could never do that when I was just a layperson. It took a long time to learn how to relax the body and meditate for long periods. And we do 40 minutes here, which is a lot. So here come this. Others coming in. Very good. Okay, so it's now 3 o'clock, so I shall start. So again, once more, anyone who's come for the introduction to meditation class that is being held in a room to my right, this is the ongoing class where after about 15 or 20 minutes of some basic little instructions, then we have the opportunity to meditate for about 40, 45 minutes and then followed by a question and answer session. And I know that sometimes it's hard to get questions from people here. So one thing you can always do is to, during the week, you can actually even just write the questions down on a piece of paper and just give them to the gentleman inside the IT room, or the computer room, whatever, and then they can actually have them ready for the afternoon session. Simply because sometimes people, well, number one, they may feel embarrassed to ask a question, and number two, they may feel that their question is not important. Or number three, sometimes you forget all your questions when you're being peaceful, which is an important point to notice, that when you do get into some nice quiet meditation, you don't need questions answered, which starts to indicate that many questions which people have, it's not something which gives them answers. It just... it's a result of a restlessness of a mind. And that once the mind becomes still and peaceful, you can see the answers for yourself. You don't need to have them put into words, but they're very clearly in front of you. And this is one of the reasons why meditation, if there is any holy book or holy dogma or texts in Buddhism, you'll find that they can be found in the stillness of meditation. That's where, if you like, the Buddha got all the Dhamma from. And so the real reverence should be to stillness and peace. So there you can actually read the whole teachings and experience of what the Buddha found. So because of that we learn just how to make our mind as peaceful and still as possible, but awake. some people have the idea, the misconception, that when you are still, that you make your mind blank, which means that there's nothing happening there at all, and you could not be further from the truth. The experience of meditation is that from stillness you get a lot of energy. And real mindfulness, deep mindfulness, is a very alive state, full of beings, full of energy, full of power. And we have to be patient and do it properly for that. And with such powerful, penetrating minds, it's really easy to, you know, just look and see the answers to some deep problems. But if you think about it, you tend to waste a lot of energy. You just make yourself depleted in the power of your mindfulness, which means that sometimes that you can waste hours and hours and hours and hours trying to find answers to problems. Instead, you're just quiet and still, and the answers just come to you so clear and so penetrating, so deep, which is one of the reasons why we have this amazing power of meditation, that you do. Basically, to see the Dhamma, see truth, see freedom for ourselves. So when we do meditate, we have to somehow or other get a reasonably peaceful body. But there are times when our body is just sick, it's aching, it's got these pains which we cannot sort of overcome. You know, even through this meditation. But what we can do, we can go inside of them. And this is where, using this simile of the zooming in on Google Maps, focusing into the center of things, it means what's on the edge just falls off the screen. Just go deep, 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 deep into stuff. And then you find the aches and the pains. They're not right deep inside of you. They are actually peripheral. And telling that anecdote of, I mentioned it to a nun the other day, of all those mosquitoes on you in Thailand, unbearable, having to sit for a couple of hours, you know, with your teacher Ajahn Chah, who didn't get bit half as much, not even a quarter as much, but it was so unbearable until. You just should have really got up and run away or something. But pride kept me sitting there. And then just the only alternative was to go inside. So you use that image. For me it was the image of focusing in on something, going in, until you got to the point where you couldn't feel your body. So it disappeared. And it's not an amazing thing. Well, that's an amazing thing. It's not a sort of supernatural thing. People do that when they're watching the TV. They've got an amazing movie on or something. And that when they're watching that, they can't even be aware of, you know, the aches and the pains on them. So which means that their feet, their legs go asleep. It's only when the movie's finished. Or, well, they really need to go to the toilet, they're busting to go to the loo. And then only afterwards, I really need to go. But when you're actually right there, focused on something else, something more enjoyable, you find it blots out the aches and the pains. Which is one of the reasons why that we can meditate sometimes with any condition. Just going inside and inside and inside and inside. And have that feeling, not to get rid of things, but to go inside of things. And once you can go inside of things, you find, this is Mabachan Chah telling the story of how he overcame his malaria fever once and forever. When he just had this really strong fever, and instead of trying to escape from it, just go right inside of it. Until like the eye of a storm in the middle of that, there was no movement of the air. For him, in the eye of a fire, he says, it's like a blazing fire, getting hotter and hotter, and he went right into the center of it, where it was cool. And it got hotter and hotter until it exploded. And that was the breaking of the fever. And the last time he had malaria. all of those, be careful about following that just because you think you've got the power to do it. But nevertheless, there is that possibility. And there is also, it describes the way of a meditator, go inside of stuff. So you go inside of your body. Not, you know, physically, but just getting inside of this pain, this ache, this whatever. Go inside, don't be afraid. It's a fear which blocks fear. And inside it's very peaceful and very still. And there you go into your mind. When people say, well, what the heck is the mind? It's what's inside of your body, if you like to visualize it that way. Where you don't feel aches and pains in the body. You just know this mind. You know a mind by, you know a garden by what's inside of the garden. You know a forest because there's trees and bushes and the usual animals in the forest and the birds. You know a mind by what's inside of it. You know the fears, the anxieties, the emotions, the thoughts, the will. And all of that defines what we mean by a mind. And so we go inside of that. And we get to know all these emotions. And especially all these fears of the past and the future. I always say there are two types of meditation. Second Noble Truth Meditation, Third Noble Truth Meditation. Second Noble Truth in Buddhism was wanting something is the cause of suffering. Yeah, you've got to want something when you're out there in the world. But when you're meditating, it's like a no-wanting zone. So you just sit there. If you don't want anything in the whole world, you're happy to be here. You don't want anything else. This is aching, painful, dull. May not be going the way you would prefer it, but it's here. You've arrived in this place, in this moment. Now rest. And when you arrive in the present moment, there's no place to go. To go somewhere you need a map of the future, perception, an idea of some place else to go. I think many of you know by now, wherever you go, it's all the same. But you stay here. Then first of all it doesn't feel that good. But it's enough. Because you suppress, if you like, this wanting, this fault-finding mind. It's always thinking that somewhere else is better, or trying to overcome your fear of this present moment by just going off into your database of memories, some real, some fantasy. You let go of the past, you let go of the future, and you're here. And this is where the mind starts to energize and starts to wake up. Often said on retreats, the word for waking up in Pali, Bujjati, the awakened one, is the Buddha. It's the term, not enlightened, but awakened. I like that meaning because it shows you, what does it mean like being awake? Really mindful, powerfully mindful. You're not sleepy and not stumbled into things. You're really alive, very awake. And that's the idea of learning how to energize the mind in this present moment. You can see just present moment, right now. That is a place where there can't be any wanting. There can't be any ill will. There can't be any comparisons, no judging. Judging means you have to judge between something and something else. You've just got this moment. So you really get into this present moment. A place, you know it's a present moment. If there's no wanting, no other place you're going to, no history, no place where you came from. If you're a prisoner of history, you're judging yourself who you are, or what the doctors and the psychs and parents and other people have said about you. That's being judged and imprisoned by the past. And the future is totally open to you. So, we don't plan. We stay in this moment and just experiment and see what happens if you just stay here. And all that thinking, what is that thinking anyway? What is the reason why people meditate? And they don't need to think, but still they do. Why? It's that addiction to escaping from this moment, doing something, filling in the moments. Instead of that, we empty out these moments. Being here, finding out what it's like just to be, experiencing, not taking it because somebody says it's a nice place to be, not trying to prove something to others, not getting any certificates or any commendations from this Buddhist society, not having a record of how many times and you've come to a retreat and how many hours you can sit and what level of meditation you have. That is counterproductive. This is not about achieving things. This is about letting go of as much as you possibly can. The more you let go, the lighter you feel. The higher you fly when you have the least baggage. So this is where we learn just how to make peace with this moment. To be with this moment. Have this wonderful kindness opening the door of your heart to this moment. The unconditional mindfulness. Kindness. Being here. And smiling at this moment. It may not be the best, but this is where you learn. Life is never the best. If you're looking for something like the best, spend all your time, what Ajahn Chah used to say, like looking for the tortoise with a moustache. There's no such thing as a tortoise with a moustache. I thought I'd say something like that and some smart aleck goes on the net and finds out this weird species of tortoise which does have a moustache. But that's not the point. The point is you're looking for something which basically doesn't exist. So what waste of time that is. So in this journey we just see what's right here. The truth of now. Be with it. Be kind to it. The truth of kindness and unconditional mindfulness, and see what happens next. That's where the mind becomes empowered, wakes up, and all the other wonderful states of meditation, the beautiful breath, the delightful breath, it feels so good. Going deep into the world of the nimittas, the lights, the body is just receding away from you, like sounds 100 miles away. Just feelings of the body, you can hardly feel it anymore. Sometimes before the body disappears, people have this interesting phenomena of like this surface of the skin becomes just so sensitive, like ants crawling on you, like tingly feeling. All that is that the sense of touch is really being empowered, you can really feel. But then it will soon disappear and you won't feel the body at all. You just go inside. And when you go inside, that's where you get to the beautiful world of your mind. You don't train your mind. You just let it be. And just see just how easy it is to come to a state of stillness. And how powerful you feel these things. An emotional, experiential, just experience of what stillness really is and how powerful it can be. And how it puts all other things in perspective. And how you bliss out. Not because you're being irresponsible. Because afterwards, you do have power, clarity, to make whatever decisions you need to make in your life, to look after your body, to help others. A great source of wisdom and energy and clarity, simply by encouraging stillness and being here and patience to allow this moment to reveal her secrets, to open up and see the beauty of what's inside, the profound Dhamma. So that's just the introduction. So if you haven't already got into a comfortable meditation position, please do so now. And just once again, for those who've come to the introduction to meditation class that is being held in the room to my right, this is the ongoing class. Oops, I'm not being blessed with holy water. When the body is relaxed, check again starting with your legs. You find you can always relax a little bit more. That extra bit of kindfulness, looking a bit deeper with the intention of bringing comfort and ease to your body. It helps the body just relax. And if ever you find it difficult to sleep at night, this is what you can do. Parts of the body, relax to the max, feel them, and learn your own experience how to take something like your left calf, feel it, find out why it is tense and why it relaxes. You find you can relax it, the feeling of ease, comfort increases. You get to know how this works. It is a letting go. We have to learn that from your own experience, from the feedback which comes from mindfulness. And sweep up my legs, willing to pause if I need extra attention on one area of the body. Experience the sensations in my butt, pressing against the cushion. Just a little bit of kindness relaxes that feeling. Move up to my back. It needs a stretch. My back feels comfortable. And then go on to my shoulders, loosening them, freeing them from any pulling or squashing. So I feel light and easy. I go down my arms. My hands, feeling, seeing if there's something I can do to relax. Move this way and move that way. See what works. Go to my neck. First of all, making sure my head's not too far forward or too far back. It's balanced. If I have any irritations in my throat, just relax them. To my head. Just relaxing the muscles around the eyes and the mouth. I can feel the high humidity making me sweat. Reminds me of Bangkok or Singapore or Malaysia. That's something which I cannot fight. So I just make peace with that humid air against my skin. Make peace with it. I go God, to behind my eyes, my brain, having to process so much information, make decisions, and look at my brain. I'd rather imagine it. Give it kindness and respect. So you can take a break. The next half an hour break, you can relax. You don't need to figure out anything. I'm going to use another part of the knowing. You can use the mind. When the body is just there, relax, at ease. I still need to adjust. There's not a competition of who can be the most physically immobile. So you can move whenever you wish. Whenever it's the most reasonable, wise thing to do. And once my body is at ease, I know because I'm used to this and it feels comfortable. It feels delightful. The delight of a relaxed body. It's also great for the health. Then go to my mind. First of all, my peaceometer. How peaceful am I now? You start your mindfulness of the peaceometer by just giving it a number, 1 to 10, just because we're used to numbers. Are you really peaceful or very agitated? You don't think one is superior than the other. You just know, and then discover by trial and error what makes you more peaceful, what moves the needle of your peaceometer closer to one, what agitates you, why? And as we learn, we find it's pretty simple once we know the wisdom power behind making peace with this moment. And we also get to know what peace feels like. Not as an idea or a source of frustration when you can't get peaceful. Sometimes peace is not stopping the thoughts. It just makes you tired with a battle against your mind, trying to stop this thought and trying to stop that thought. You don't get peace by fighting battles. And after a while, when you find some peace, then it's easy to be in this moment. Just being here. You can change at any time. You can change your posture. You can change your meditation object. As long as you're peaceful, stay here. stay here because it's peaceful. It might not be the most comfortable, but it's all you have. This is good enough. And if, like most, not everybody, you become aware of your breathing, as long as the breathing's happening in this moment, just follow her. Be a friend. Breathing in peacefully, breathing out, letting go. close to the end of meditation. How are you? How do you feel? How peaceful, how relaxed are you? And now we'll ring the gong 3 times. Take some questions from overseas first. Well, there is a sutta class tomorrow from Ajahn Brahmani, 3 o'clock. From Germany, Romania and Sydney. How can we keep looking forward in meditation instead of remembering all the things from the past? How can we have the strength to keep going? You don't keep going, you keep still. Don't look forward in meditation. You look deeper into the present moment. That gives you a different perspective. Have the strength to keep going if life looks a bit miserable. You know, sometimes it's not life. It's the way we look at it. And sometimes, if you're very peaceful, very still and powerful, it's amazing what you can see. But if you're tired, you tend to get depressed and anxious, and everything looks awful. So now, similarly, what's my problem right now? All I can see is my hand, which is only a small part of the universe, because I have it right close to me. That's why that's all I can see. When I put my hand where it belongs, at the end of my arm, then I can see my hand and the rest of the world as well. Sometimes when we get obsessed, we can only see one thing. When we're attached, addicted, just really into something, so close we can't see its relationship to the rest of the world. So in meditation, one thing it teaches us, to put things down for a while. So when we come out of meditation, hands over here somewhere. Wow. My old preceptor, who passed away a long time ago, that was his Somdet, that's Watsaket. He was from Gotsamoy, that's where he was born. A long time ago, before that was well known as a tourist destination. But he was, like everybody else, before he got into administration, he had to learn his meditation. I remember him telling me, just personally, the story when he was meditating in the jungle, maybe an hour, 2 hours. And when he came out of meditation, there was a snake on his lap, who curled up. And he recognized it was a very venomous snake. But the weird thing was, he wasn't at all afraid. He wasn't scared. He knew where he normally would be. You just sit there and, oh, this is interesting. And he just sat there for a little while and the snake just came out of his meditation as well, I suppose, and just slithered off. And sometimes these, you know, the monks who, you know, achieved great prominence in the admin of Thailand, he was a Somdet, he was acting Sangharaja for a while. But, just, he said, amazing the powers of meditation. You're just there. So how do you have the strength to keep going? If he just had sat down just writing a letter on the snake, he'd have probably freaked out. But if you're in deep meditation, it changes the way you look at things. you're peaceful. So don't look forward in meditation. Just stay in the present moment. One of the reasons why people get a bit depressed, remembering all the things from the past, that just burdens you. It takes away your energy. You don't need to do that. You don't learn from the past as much as you learn from the present moment, from now. So just stay still, follow the instructions. And you don't look forward in meditation, you don't remember things of the past, you stay where you are. And that gives you enormous strength. Now that you come out from the meditation, you've got great power, it's going to do all sorts of stuff. What is the right effort in meditation? Sometimes letting go is not easy. It is because if there's no ease in letting go, you're not really letting go. You're trying to let go. It's like you're letting go in the future. I'm doing this now to get something next. I hear Ajahn Brahm and all these other teachers are saying about what meditation can do. Yeah, I want that as well. One thing, if it's not easy when you're meditating, it's because you're doing Second Noble Truth meditation. You want something. Wanting is a cause of suffering. So if it's suffering, it's because you're wanting something. So, sometimes letting go is not easy. If it's not easy, it means it's Second Noble Truth meditation. If it really is letting go, the Third Noble Truth, at least the bliss of Nibbana. It's peaceful, it's easy. You've got nothing to do. What's hard about that? You think it would be the most wonderful thing in the world to talk, but just sit there, don't judge. Just be. No A, B, C, D, E, F's, as I was saying last night. I'm going to get into trouble for that because one school teacher was said she's going to teach her kids that the next few days. Oh my goodness, the parents are going to really hammer me. Where did you get that from? Ajahn Brahm or that fellow? Anyway, it was as long as you understand what it really means. The right effort in meditation is the effort to say no. It's the mindfulness, it's the wisdom power. It's the effort to restrain. The effort is to check your mind and let go, to stop, to get rid of all this judging, which means comparing, which means what do you have now comparing to something else in the future or the past is totally unfair and unreliable. So just be. Let go of controlling, doing, judging. Even easy, hard, that's just comparisons. So right effort in meditation is to listen, follow these instructions, just let go. You know it's letting go when you practice on your body and the body relaxes. Feels good. Why? Because you've let go of controlling and thinking, this must be the right posture. Ajahn Brahm's robe keeps on falling off. That's not right. It's letting go. Okay, I'll now put effort in. It'll fall off in a few moments again. I'll just let things be. Relax to the max. When you let things be, effort makes me tight. Effort, after a while, creates a lot of sickness and blockages. I'm trying. Just relax. Ajahn Chah's simile, the hand, it only moves because of the wind of wanting. You stop wanting and the leaf stops all by itself. What effort did the leaf put in to become still? It just protected you from all of the wantings, the winds, which make the mind want something in the future, thinking that somewhere in the future it can be better. The winds of the past, thinking you can change what happened in the past. You can learn something, you can protect it. But no. Just stay in this moment, and then you know what right effort really is. In meditation, we recommend letting go of the doer. We also recommend to arouse energy. No need to pull back. How do you arouse energy without the doer? Oh, the doer which sucks the energy. It's like a leech. It's like one of those ticks which suck all your blood away. And that's what the doer does. So imagine that you don't do anything. You just sit there, peaceful in this moment. Don't go anywhere. Imagine how much energy you save. You feel that. You wake up, you're alive, you're bright. So that's how you arouse energy, by saying no to the door, recognizing it. And for those of you traditional Buddhists, you know that the doer in Buddhism was symbolized by Mara. Mara is, sometimes people say it's like a devil and a tempter, but oh no, it's nothing like that. Because it just asks the Buddha, you can do so much in this world, come and do something. No, I know you, Mara. It always tries to get a reaction out of you. No. You just be here. Just being in this moment. And then energy comes. Amazing energy. And you feel that energy. And it's not just a myth. You're awake. So many people, when they go on meditation retreats, they don't do anything. Those who do just get frustrated. They sit there and just relax, accept this moment, don't judge. And then just after a while, the mindfulness increases. With the mindfulness increasing, just comes the energy, and you just don't do it. It just happens. You realize that the doer is what saps the energy. And the knower, the mindfulness, kindness, is what actually increases your energy. The reason why I mentioned that Ajahn Brahmar is giving the sutta class tomorrow is because early tomorrow morning I'm flying off again. Actually, I'm not going anywhere. I just sit on the plane, and the plane does all the doing. I just do the knowing. And that simile which I said a couple of weeks ago, I get a lot of insight when I fly. One of the insights was this story, reading the in-flight magazine, where it said the aircraft of the future. The aircraft of the future will have a locked cabin and the passengers in the back. And in the cabin there will only be two beings in that cabin. The pilot and his dog. That's the only two people in the cabin of future aircraft. And the purpose of the captain, the pilot, has only got one job to do, only one responsibility, and that's to feed the dog. And what the dog does, to bite that pilot if he touches anything. And that was just a wonderful stimuli for meditation. If I could put a little doggy in your mind, and every time you try and put some effort in, to stop you. Every time you try and do something. Which means the planes of the future will be automatic, far more reliable than human error. And so what would happen? The same with your minds. Automatic. Just not doing anything. Being still. Peaceful. How can you be still when you do something? So we just relax and rest. And after a while, the mind becomes so peaceful and so energized. Not through effort, but through wisdom power, through letting go. So anyway, it's a question I often answer the same answer, but you get good similes every now and again. And that simile of the pilot and the dog in the cockpit of an aircraft is actually beautiful. Anyway, any questions from our patient I sometimes say from the floor, and it actually is from the floor because you are sitting on the floor, but also any questions from the chairs as well. From the chairs or from the floor. So you're all satisfied, great. So no one will come up to me afterwards. Okay. So thank you for coming today. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. And I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Next weekend, for the Friday night talk and the Saturday afternoon meditation, we have Ajahn Chittapala coming up to teach. So please support him when he comes.